Council members, I'd like to introduce you to Jesse Becky Gomez, who is our last candidate of the day.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you, Ken.
Great. We're going to go around and just introduce ourselves and our community of residents, let you know we're statewide, if nothing else, and then ask you to make an opening comment or
sure.
a set of comments, and then we'll ask questions, and then have a closing comment and do this all in about 45 minutes.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Great.
I'm Carl Crimmins from Champlin.
Nancy Black, Minneapolis. Marilyn Cathcart, Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Sonia Hunaro-Moorhead.
Dana Bassan on New Brighton. I'm
Earl
still
Rasmussen.
Getting used to it.
Earl Rasmussen, Blaine.
Kent Ackland, St. Paul.
Carolyn Williams, St. Cloud.
Dave Larkin, Bemidji.
Yvonne Condell, Moorhead.
Tim Hitch, Maple
Grove. Janet Lexon, Lakeville.
John Dorn, Mankato.
Hi, I'm Sally Olson. I'm the TCAC staff from Shoreview.
Great. Well, thank you. My opening remarks, I have thought about this, and first of all, I am honored to be here, and to be here to think about the as a candidate for the trustees of Minsku. And this committee speaks to the heart of Minnesota. It's a civilian committee made up of volunteers who care about Minnesota and Minnesota's future. So let me say that, first and foremost, I congratulate you for your dedication, for what it means to be about the process and the level of seriousness that goes with these types of determination. So I'd like to say that first and foremost. I, years ago, was on the governor's health care cost committee, which was a civilian review panel. And we met throughout the state of Minnesota about the health care costs. And that's a segue to my opening comments. Minnesota's future has before it two areas of great concern. One is in the area of health care, and two is in the area of education. Provided an economic analysis to the Minsku board, at their strategic input committee that took place at in North Hennepin. And I would like to just say two items about that presentation, and that is this. In my background in healthcare, our total healthcare cost for the state as of 2004 was approximately $30.8 billion, according to CMS of the federal government. By 2030, if our health care costs continue to rise at a 7.4% increase, which was the previous 12-year average rate of increase from 2004, our health care costs in Minnesota will rise to $230 billion. Our fastest growing age group by 2030 is the 85 and above at 115%. We lose half of all educators in Minnesota by 2020. And in fact, depending upon the Itasca report or David Laird's group, we stand to lose between 350 to 500,000 jobs. Now, we have a profound economic asset as a Minnesota state from our corporations, from a robust economy. But you see, by 2030, the second thing I'd like to share with you is that all diverse communities in Minnesota will grow by 77%. The overall Caucasian community reduces in size by approximately 10%. And so the next 20 years that are before us are unlike anything we have experienced in the past 20 years. And why I share this with you is because this was one of the reasons why, for me, I've dedicated a great amount of time and effort in healthcare and clinical systems redesign. And at my agency, we've helped over 10,000 people get good jobs. So we know the power of workforce development. But central to Minnesota is the quality of life we enjoy. The percentage of our population that has degrees is necessary, vital, and critical to the economic future. So the question for me is that in my opening statement to share with you is how do we look at the role of our great Minnesota State College and University system and begin to look at our efforts to stave off what those trends otherwise shall be for us. And that is why I'm a candidate, is to help Minnesota champion a future of greater economic prosperity for who we are becoming holistically as Americans and as Minnesotans as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I have the pleasure of the first question. Within the first year of any of the trustees appointed this summer will be the retirement of the current chancellor. So we're curious about any experiences you've had in leadership transitions and some principles you may have developed to help make those work successfully.
Kent, that's a great question. I have served on two presidential search committees, one for Metropolitan State University and the second for the Minneapolis Foundation when I served on their board of trustees. I was also a member of the Blue Plus Board of Trustees of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, about a $900 million corporation of the larger parent company. And that group as well was a Board of Trustee member while they went through their transition. I think I bring with probably about 25 years of board experience. And my background in strategic planning in particular, I think I could add value to the transition of the retirement of the chancellor and perhaps the selection of the new chancellor as well.
With that, and I know according to your resume, you have a little bit of experience working with the Minsky system, and you serve on one of the committees.
Yes, ma'am.
What would be some ideal or attributes, characteristics that you see our next chancellor should possess?
That's a great question. Having served on two search presidential search committees, what I am going to say in my answer is that The Board of Trustees will, I'm certain, retain world-class skills to help fully develop the position description and for us to look at what is our strategic plan and how do we see the incoming chancellor being able to add value to that plan from a governance oversight perspective. This becomes among the most essential concerns, the ongoing concerns, is that we look at the skill sets and the experience that align well with Minsky. Now, having said that, Minnesota enjoys the home of 19 Fortune 500 corporations. And yet, when we start to look at per capita income between who we are in urban settings, in rural settings, in different parts of the state, we have to have a game plan that takes advantage of who we are in terms of our assets as one Minnesota. So there's a business acumen, there's a sense of on-the-ground presentation that the chancellor needs to bring that can rally all of Minnesota around what Minsky does. And we have phenomenal colleges and universities throughout the state. I really believe that the next chancellor has to help articulate a plan in advancing and accelerating academic performance and long-term educational success for who we are as a state. And that means those skills are going to have to be about bringing people together throughout all of who we are as a Minnesota economy. And I think those are going to lend themselves well to stave off these very rapidly moving concerns that we see. We know that the next biennium is going to be tougher on Minnesota. And I had encouraged members in the state legislature, senators, representatives, Republicans, Democrats, rural, urban, and suburban folks to look at these long-term trends and begin thinking about an economic plan to look at what 20 years looks like. So I think we are going to need a chancellor that can recognize the power and the value of education as among the most critical means for advancing the economic quality of life for all of Minnesota.
What do you think are the major challenges facing Minniscue, and how would you correct it?
I think one of the challenges for Minniscue is greater clarity around Minniscue in terms of, I'm going to use the word distinctive competency, but who we are as a one system. We have very, very strong colleges and universities. And the question for me is, I wonder sometimes that if we have too much competition amongst different institutions, do we sub-optimize our ability to think in terms of an overall game plan? So I think that's a challenge. And at the same time, our institutions and our leaders throughout these wonderful institutions have a tremendous vibrancy of bringing to great reality what that local institution means for the local economy. And so that's always a challenge with institutions that have multiple institutions. It's always a challenge when there is a very strong constituency that's represented. So part of that, I think, is always marshaling who we are overall. And the key to that is clarity on metrics for what we believe are critically important for us in moving forward. So I think that's a challenge. I think the future budgets for the state of Minnesota are only going to get more difficult. So for the Minniscue board has to be versed, and I've been through many boards and efforts that have gone through restructuring, reorganization, yet remaining true to the overarching strategic focus and outcomes that are critical. So that's going to have to be part of the solutions to address in future budget deficits that we're seeing in Minnesota. The Minniscue board itself is going to have to really think about how do we marshal beyond a biennium. And that's going to require a higher level thinking, because our institutions, whether it's in healthcare, whether it's in economic development or workforce development or in education, all have to be thinking along those lines.
Nancy.
Yes. Can you please tell us about your work on the Community Action Diversity Council in terms of the statement that's in your essay about, I want to know about the innovative ways that you've come up with to reach diverse populations?
Well, thank you so much. You know, there are some principles that have guided my work throughout my career, whether it's helping diverse, talented minority youth pursue college education, whether it's been in helping business entrepreneurs from diverse businesses advance their net worth, or whether it's been at the Red Cross or United Way or other institutions that have been, that have reached out and marshaled a sense of community to support one another. In my estimation, looking at the power of who we are as a state, I believe our diversity is a profound strength. And what I really know through our efforts at workforce development, we serve over 16 languages in our employment services. And when we see the newcomer communities, when we see the diverse communities of established communities, we see a wonderful contribution towards the vibrancy of Minnesota. So how do we innovate? And part of the solution, in my estimation, is for many diverse communities, the power of family is so critical to their success, to their sense of prosperity. And I think we are rediscovering the role of family And part of the way we innovate, such as, I'll give you an example, we often are working with families that have come from cash portions of their societies or the areas where they're the agronomy portions of societies, and intergenerationally may not have had college in the background. But when we help parents answer the question, what are your hopes and dreams of your child's future? We recognize that's the universal question for all Minnesotans. And it is helping people discover the power of education as the number one single means to help children fully realize their potential in America. And in my estimation, that is part of fully realizing the American dream for who we are today and who we shall become more so for tomorrow as well. Thank you for the question.
Yes, Tim?
Can you talk about your belief in the value of government investment in higher education and then kind of compare that in, against the other pieces of the state government, healthcare, social services, K-12 education? How do you balance?
It's a great question. And I think for me, I want to not become professorial, but the two people that I had trained with and have studied with, one was Dr. Edward Deming, who helped to rebuild Japan after World War II. He was in his late 90s. I studied with him what I'll answer the question, his system of profound knowledge. The other gentleman that you may know is Tor Dahl. And Tor Dahl is the chairman emeritus of the World Productivity Congress that holds annual meetings throughout the world on advancing productivity. I had the enormous pleasure of helping him look at the productivity plan of a country. And what I was profoundly moved by in his analysis that showed you can make tremendous advances in the productivity of a country or a company. And so much so his work showed at the statistical regression analysis, the statistical significance of the 95%, that when you have the values of safety, freedom, and fairness, you actually increase the productivity of a country or a company. Now, for us in Minnesota, I think one of the most important indicators that we've not spent enough time on is what our per capita income is. And our per capita income, from my last recollection, I believe it's 11th nationally. And why that's an important indicator, it's because, in essence, it's the total number of people, and the total income, and we get a per capita income. Where do we invest that add value to furthering the productivity of individuals and families? And we find that when education has a phenomenal return on investment from an economic standpoint. The other area that I learned firsthand, and I will never forget, when I was in Moorhead, Minnesota, in a capacity similar to you, and I heard a family that said, we have to do something about healthcare because they were going bankrupt and they didn't know if they could afford healthcare or make their house payment. And what we discovered through that effort is 80% of our costs in healthcare are due to 20% of the patients. So incredibly, when we invest in education and the education of improved academic performance and long-term educational success, we're making an enormous economic contribution towards the productivity of that person. And we have to accelerate in Minnesota. The overall achievement at high school graduation rates, the overall achievement of students who come into the MNSCU system and then graduate into the MNSCU system. I hope we have a few moments to also talk about workforce development, because that's the kind of new strategic footprint that a MNSCU has to be even better deployed. But to the second part, how do we make those tough choices? We have to think, what is the role of government in helping to invest into the welfare or to the quality of life of a community? and it is about the baseline so that there is a vibrant private economy. It is investing in so that there is a very vibrant sense of community, and clearly healthcare and education are two economic drivers that have accelerating consequences for us over the next 20 years. And this is why, for me, we can't move far enough with a sense of urgency for all of Minnesota around the issue of high school graduation rates and movement into a 0-16 mind frame. We have to do that for all Minnesotans.
Go through the door you opened on workforce development.
Okay. Thank you. This is an area that I really believe that there's opportunity for innovation. We host, through my agency, an expo every year. We have 60 wonderful corporations from Minnesota participate. We probably have up to 2,000 job seekers from Minnesota and the Dakotas. And I remember in 1997 when Ramsey County organized a future search to look at how to help 9,000 people go from welcome to work. I was part of that effort. Through the years in workforce development, the three parts that have to come together seamlessly is community, MNSCU, and corporations. One of the innovations I'm testing with a very large retail, I've gone to them and said, if I can bring a MNSCU institution and we focus that institution on particular skill sets that you need, as a way to bring in people into MNSCU and in real time bring them into workforce development, we're creating a strategic advantage. And why is that? It's because other systems also struggle with that. The power of MNSCU, being able to work closer with our corporate base, working closer, the great gains that we are making in diversity is creating the kind of synergies we have to accelerate because of the aging of the workforce development. Though we are in a tough economy right now, when this economy gets white hot, what is going to happen, in my estimation, there are going to be many, many jobs that simply are going to go unfilled. And we have to be in MNSCU focused more with DEED and with our corporate sector in creating a much more seamless framework so that the education our students are receiving also meet and marriage with the opportunities of workforce that currently exist. Our competition today is China. Our competition today is India. Two-thirds of the population are around the Pacific Rim. China and India today produce 10 times more science-degreed individuals than we do in Minnesota. And I'm concerned when I hear Chancellor McCormick saying that in order for us to meet the competition by 2020, we have to produce actually 6,500 additional degreed individuals every year. This is why I really believe it is a clarion call that with the principles of productivity that we spoke about, bringing in our corporate base, who are very excited about such ideas, and realigning MNSCU as in its great power that it has for one Minnesota, MNSCU can play a role that I think is better suited as a large institution for the populations we serve, for the degrees that we provide, and for the needs of the rapidly changing workforce development. And so I think it's testing these new ideas where we marriage and merge a more seamless approach to coordinate that effort towards jobs. That might mean revisiting guilds. It might mean that there are employee support groups and employee group development that are aligned with colleges and universities. I think we are moving forward if we take our centers of excellence and take that one step farther. Notably, our close work with our workforce folks, as well as with our corporations, those are the ideas that I get very excited about because then we provide a distinctive competitive edge that become the envy of others, and it helps us to better compete with the folks we're competing with now globally.
Nancy?
Yeah, I've kind of lost track of the centers of excellence a little bit. And I do remember that within 3 years, they were supposed to be self-sustaining. Can you tell us? I think there were six. Are any self-sustaining? Do you know?
I'm not aware of them being self-sustaining at this point, but I don't have really good performance data on that. But that's a great question, though. And I think that's the opportunity for us is to look at that.
Thank you.
You talked about early on about the importance of workforce training and the future of Minnesota.
Yes.
As well as also the population change.
Yes, ma'am.
And currently, high school graduations are kind of dropping, specifically students of color. So what should Minnesota do, because they are the future Minnesota clients? So what do you think that Minnesota should do now so they can have a successful, educated, mainly group in the future?
That's a great question. At our agency, we are developing a new program called the Learning Together Program. And Eileen Kugler, who's a national education expert, in her work with the Robert Wood Johnson, identified a growing concern between school districts, production of teachers, and diverse communities where English is a second language. And our program seeks to bridge those critical issues. And in fact, Eileen and myself have looked at how do we create a national forum that gets to the heart of this matter. Now, the Urban Teachers Program of Metropolitan State University, I'm proud to say, part of the Minsky system, we are inviting the Urban Teachers Program to be part of our efforts at helping families answer the question, what are your hopes and dreams for your children's future, working with the schools and helping the schools deepen their skill sets of that cultural competency of harnessing the power of our families. This becomes the opportunity nationally. And this is where I think, in terms of education, it's a three-part answer. Number one, in reaching out, of inviting diverse communities so that Minsky is as much a home. Number two, looking at how we deepen the relationships with the schools and all communities and Minsky so that we're developing the ability to deepen the skill sets of our schools from early childhood, elementary or middle schools, all the way through high school, so that they have those skill sets to better invite families to be part of that child's future. And the third area that we're seeing is an intentionality of effort. Teachers are facing much more diverse schools, and how well are we preparing teachers to be effective in helping to bring in families, because we know that families are critically important for our communities. And the greater we can bring in and harness the power of families, the more successful those children will be. And so I think Minsky has a very powerful role to play. And I know that Metropolitan State University had achieved a notable distinction of having zero educational disparities. And I have not heard of any institution achieving that. This was President Hammersmith in her opening remarks that I'm honored to say was Master of Ceremonies in her inauguration. What can we learn from our great institutions that we can figure out to take to scale? I got to tell you, I'm very impressed with the diversity officers throughout Minnesota and their great work in playing a role carefully and mindfully of helping Minsky and our diverse communities and all communities work closer together. But it's a great question, and I'm very, very excited about what Minsky can further in helping to achieve two things: improved academic performance and long-term educational success. That has to be our mantra as well. Thanks.
Other questions? Yvonne.
What would you like to see happen should you be appointed to the board, what particular role would you like to fill based on your past experiences and that you will bring to the board?
Thank you. I probably can help serve with planning. I probably can help look at achieving clarity. And I probably could be of best service is helping to look at how operatively, from an oversight, you maintain your core operations, and at the same time, you become more transformative. And that has been generally the role I have played on boards, and always in deference to committees. And so planning is probably going to be a strong suit. Probably also in reaching communities to advance a sense of, I'll use the word productivity. And what I mean by that is the constituencies within the Minsky system. How can we advance to be more efficacious, more productive? And that comes from my Deming background, too. So there's probably some operative work and metrics that I'm able to help. And lastly, I would certainly, over the course of time, hope to rise to a leadership role within the Minsky board as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, quick question about planning as related back to the search for the next chancellor. Do we put the plan in place and let the plan drive the search, or do we look for a chancellor with great visionary planning skills and have him or her then redo the plan once he or she arrives?
The nuanced answer is the core principles and the core metrics that drive the institution. My sense of highly successful searches have done that. When there's a new plan and then a new president, the president has to make that plan their own, and it may not allow them to nuance what their strengths are and what they perceive as the strengths of the institution. I think where we can identify the core principles for Minsky, the core principles operatively and the core outcomes we're seeking, you have a much more efficacious and more successful search.
Any other questions?
There's one I'd like to ask. No one else has. What should we have asked you that we didn't ask you?
Well, maybe about my own education. And coming from a family that I'm proud to say, my German side came to Minnesota in 1867, and the Swedish side of my family came in the middle of the last century, and the Mexican side of my family came in the 1920s to Minnesota. And I was the first in my family to receive my baccalaureate degree. And in our larger family, I was the first to receive my master's degree. I actually had turned down an MBA executive program with another competing institution, I won't say. But I chose the wonderful program at Metropolitan State University because they afforded the flexibility to be about learning strategic planning. And my mentor was Dr. Ellen Yelsey, who was Director of Strategic Planning for Honeywell Avionics Division. And that kind of experience through a Minsky institution has meant the world to me. So I want to come back and say that I'm so honored to be a graduate for many years now, as my resume says, of Metropolitan State University. And I'm a true believer and a champion for the role of Minsky as well.
Did you get a master's degree from Metro State?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
And so did
I.
Thank you.
Can I ask one last question?
Yes, go ahead.
How would you deal with conflict of interest?
It's a great question. Good, strong boards have an intentionality about that, disclosure, and even the mere appearance. It is always best to fully disclose any potential conflict of interest. And I know that there's probably excellent forms and an excellent overview about that, but clearly that's an item that forthright and in bringing that to the attention in the official and formal capacities is always the best way to proceed.
Okay. We tell candidates that this is roughly a 40-hour-a-month job. It and the University of Minnesota Regents are probably the biggest volunteer jobs there are in the state. That 40 hours includes a couple of day-long meetings, 6-7 times a year, mm-hmm. Some ceremonial activities, some visits to campuses throughout the state, and a lot of reading.
Yes.
Reading in the evenings and the weekends. So it's not all time that's committed. How does that work with your current position and your current volunteer activities?
Well, I have a very robust volunteer experience, and I have always felt that. I'm already moving, not to preclude anything, but if I was to be selected, of narrowing my board involvement on other committees. I've already was asked to nominate. I think it's the Catholic Spirit Publishing Company, and I declined to move forward with that because I felt it would be better if I am selected that I would dedicate my time and my volunteer activities to this most profound role as a trustee of the Minsky Board of Directors.
Your turn for some final comments.
Well, thank you, first of all. I know that I read the article of the folks who are looking to serve, and I just know that in your work, it is an extraordinary opportunity, and it is one of stewardship, and is one, for me personally, having served in similar capacities throughout the years, of this dedication of civilian review of looking for the best candidates is one that personally I'm tremendously grateful, and so I congratulate you on that. I not necessarily to ask questions, but being mindful of change that's before Minsky. Chancellor McCormick is among our nation's great assets. He's an extraordinary leader. And those are very difficult shoes to fill. So the work before you in identifying trustees that can add value and stay the course and design a course of being even more efficacious in the future is one of a great responsibility. And so I commend you in your work, and I was very grateful for the opportunity to be with you during these events as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jesse.
Yes.
Thank you. I have to say, as a